Welcome to the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. We feature hot topics and novel perspectives, always with relevance to the dental career and practice. Join our hosts, Anina and Elena, as they speak with new guests from around the world each month and learn more about what's important for the next generation in oral regeneration.
Hello, everybody. After a very interesting and perhaps sensitive topic in the last episode, in this episode, we turn to a topic that we probably all deal with on a daily basis and probably experience the difficulties of talking to patients and trying to motivate them to change their oral health behavior in a certain way. And we may also wonder what we can do if the patient won't or can't change their behavior, isn't it, Elena?
Yes, absolutely, Anina. I think we all struggle sometimes with patient motivation and behavior change. So this is why today we have a special guest with us that is going to share his views and experience on this topic. I'm very pleased to welcome Jorge Tsaras, who is a psychologist and works as a researcher in behavior change at the University of Manchester. So through his work, he tries to transfer aspects of psychology to the clinical setting with the aim to promote oral behavior changes. So hi, George, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Anina. Hi, Elena. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm very happy to be here with you today and very happy to have an interesting conversation on a very important topic.
Hi, George. How did you come across to work with dentists and also the topic behavior changes?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting kind of path into dentistry. As you mentioned at the beginning, I'm a psychologist. So while I was training as a psychologist back in Greece, I was volunteering in a solidarity clinic that was set up during kind of the financial crisis a few years ago. And they were desperate for help and in every department. So one day I just found myself assisting a dentist. And out of that, I started to have an interest in dentistry and all the links between dental health, mental health, systemic health. And that kind of led the way to undertaking a PhD in dental public health a few years ago at the University of Manchester.
Okay, so George, in order to start all, you know, from a common ground, let's say, can you briefly define for us what we mean when we talk about behavior change in oral health and how this relates to the big topic of communication with patients?
Yeah, sure. So behavior change is kind of a vast discipline and covers all aspects of human behaviors, whether that's healthcare or not. And behavior change has gained a lot of momentum over the years with an increased interest on how we can change people's behaviors and sustain changes over time to achieve better health outcomes or any outcome, really. And that is the essence of behavior change. So when we think about behavior change, we need to think about how do we change people's behaviors to begin with and how do we sustain those changes over a long period of time? And that's where it gets quite tricky because we know that people's behaviors could lapse over time. People might not follow what we told them at the beginning. So that's where it gets quite tricky, but also very interesting from like a research practitioner perspective. When it comes within dentistry, behavior change is a relatively new concept, but recently there's been a lot of developments that all highlighted the key role that behavior change has to play within oral health care. And as for the link between behavior change and communication, the two really go hand in hand. So you do need good communication to initiate and achieve behavior change. And communication is the gateway to start one's journey, to start our patient's journey into behavior change.
Yeah, and before we get deeper into the topic, I wanted to ask you from your experience, how do you see dentists being viewed by patients, or to what extent we as dentists are accepted by our patients?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point, Anina. And actually, we do need to remember, obviously, that dentists are essentially healthcare providers and healthcare professionals. And what we also know is that for many people, for the general public, they will see their dentist a lot more often than they might see a healthcare professional, like their GP or any other specialty. And we do know that dental professionals, as healthcare professionals, have it as part of their role, not to just focus on the oral cavity, not just focus on the mouth, but focus on like people's overall well-being and health. And we do know that when it comes to patients and dentists, patients are very open to dentists. They feel they see them as a credible source of information. They obviously value their expertise. but sometimes there is a bit of a mismatch between what the patients expect from the dentist and what the dentist is doing to the patient. For example, there are not many people that might think of the dentist as someone that might talk to them about smoking cessation or their alcohol use, even though those are important issues for kind of oral health and is part of dentist's role to engage in those conversations. Some patients might not necessarily expect that when they walk into a dental office, and they might not really feel it's the dentist's role to have these conversations. So that is an issue that some dentists might need to overcome in their day-to-day practice. However, given the role of dentists as healthcare professionals, these conversations beyond the mouth and the oral cavity are crucial, and they're very important for the wider well-being and health of their patients. So dentists do have a huge amount of power, respect, and credibility. And if they harness that to work with patients on behavior change, they can have very, very important outcomes, beneficial outcomes for their patients and their health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you, but I agree with what you said also that sometimes it's difficult, you know, that patients see us also as a healthcare provider overall, you know, at 360 degrees. Sometimes they just think, you know, I go to the dentist just to fix my tooth, and it's difficult to change this mentality, but you are absolutely right. So, George, as an expert, you know, in this field, can you roughly point out which are the most important behavior change techniques so that, you know, tomorrow we go to the practice and we can start applying them? Because I can imagine there are different approaches that we can follow, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There is quite a wealth and a depth of different theories, frameworks. There are tools. There are things that have been applied in dentistry, things that have not yet applied to dentistry. So it could be quite overwhelming to find kind of a starting point. When it comes to kind of health, well-being, and dentistry as well, one very well-known model that I would like to highlight, and is something that a lot of people can easily get into, is the COMBI model. Some of your listeners might have come across it because it's quite well-known, quite famous. COMBI stands for capability, opportunity, and motivation for a behavior. And these are the three key aspects when it comes to achieving any behavior. So we want patients, we want people to have the capability, that is the physical capability to do the behavior, and the cognitive capability to understand the instructions or what we're telling them. We want people to have the opportunity within their day-to-day busy lives to undertake the behavior, because it's all fair and square in the dental practice to say, I want you to brush twice a day, do this, do that. But actually what really happens outside of the dental practice might be very different. So we need to make sure that people have the opportunity to undertake the behavior. And finally, we need to focus on motivation, because most of the times people might be capable, they might have the dexterity skills to brush their teeth, they might know why it is important, they might have the time to do it, but they might be lacking the motivation. And motivation is the key to unlock behavior change more generally. It takes time and it might take a bit of effort to motivate people, but there are some specific techniques that we could highlight that could be used within the dental practice as well. And also, when it comes to kind of an important aspect of the COMBI model as well, is information provision. And there used to be a very deep held belief within behavior change up until a few years ago that just simply telling people what to do, if I tell you to brush, you should go and brush. Actually, what we know now is that simply is not enough. Telling people what to do is not enough, because information is only part of capability, is only part of people awareness. What about the motivation? What about the opportunity? So we need to move away from just telling people what to do and thinking that people will just go away and do it, to engaging with them to understand their opportunity and their motivation, and to help them achieve the targeted behavior.
This is very interesting, actually. But you know, in very practical terms, are there specific guidelines that we can read and that, you know, us as dental clinicians, we can follow, we should be aware of?
Yeah, and I think, Elena, that's a good point. And as a psychologist, we love theories and we love frameworks, but we know that as dentists, you want something practical. So a lot of work has gone into translating those frameworks, like the COMBI model, onto very practical guidelines that someone can use on day-to-day. From a UK perspective, we have very specific and very recent guidelines in place that came out at the late 2021 from what used to be Public Health England. Those guidelines are part of the Delivering Better Oral Health national guidelines for England, but they've been used across the UK. And actually a lot of other countries really look up at the UK practices for what is happening in the field, because we're kind of a leader in this area. So I think it's relevant for people beyond the UK as well. So within those guidelines, there is a series of steps that any dental professional needs to take with patients in day-to-day practice. The guidelines target five areas that are part of dentists' role and responsibility when it comes to behavior change. Those are oral hygiene practices and increasing exposure to fluoride, is about diet and sugar intake, smoking and tobacco use, alcohol use, and as well as how easy and frequent people use dental services. So if we think about those five areas, that's a very good starting point for dental professionals to know when they might need to engage with patients when it comes to behavior change. So it's not just purely looking at how people brush, if they brush or not, but we have to think about smoking, we have to think about diet, alcohol, and how do we actually get people to see their dentist frequently and adhere to appointments and recall examinations and so on. So those are the five areas. And it's very important to then consider how do we actually do behavior change and what do we actually do in practice. And those guidelines have a very specific step approach where you initially will raise the issue with the patient and actually try to make sure that the patients want to undertake change, because forceful change never takes you far enough. If someone is not ready to change, and that's absolutely understandable, you just need to acknowledge the fact that it is important to change some behaviors within kind of their oral health or smoking and so on. But actually, it is only up to the patient and if they're ready to start that journey. So forcing people to change, that is never going to result in a positive outcome. And then there are other things you can do along the way, depending on the behavior, depending on what the goal is at hand. Is it to reduce smoking? Is it to brush more? Is it to floss more? And so on. So those are very good stepped approaches, and they are built up with a whole wealth of other very brief interventions. There are very brief interventions for dental professionals when it comes to smoking and alcohol that could be very easily, within a few minutes, used within the dental practice. So that is a very good starting point for anyone who wants to learn more about the practical steps, is to review that guidelines, the guidelines from Public Health England on delivering better oral health.
Yeah, I think these are important techniques and models. And I was also searching on the website, and actually there's a lot of materials displayed on this on the internet, and it's very interesting also to read. However, as a clinician, I wonder how to implement these models in the clinic. And maybe you can give us some examples, like really practical examples.
Yes, and I would like to also kind of highlight at this stage that something that some dentists might be feeling is a bit of a disconnect between their confidence, competence, and what they actually do in dental practice. And I would just like to say, as kind of an overriding principle, you shouldn't let perfect get in the way of good when it comes to behavior change. And you should really try and engage with behavior change with your patients, even if you don't get it right at the first time, because it's better to do something than nothing. To your point, Anina, in terms of a practical example, so for example, if we think about smoking, as I said, and following the guidelines that are available for dental professionals, obviously we start by raising the issue. That is the first point. We can raise the issue in a very open, non-accusatory way. For example, I can see from my examination or from your history that you do smoke. Is that something you'd like to talk a bit more about? And as I said before, if the patients don't want to engage at that point, that is fine. We just need to leave the door open, reaffirm how important this issue is for you as a professional, to say that it's very important for me. I understand if you're not ready to talk about it now, but I would like to talk next time I see you in 6 months or a year, because this is very important. However, if someone is ready for change, they might say, yeah, actually, I would like to discuss about my smoking habits because it's something that concerns me, it's something that I would like to see if I can reduce. That's where then you start exploring the behavior into more details. You want to understand where the behavior, when and where the behavior occurs. Obviously, smoking could be through the day, or it could be during stressful periods of time. It could be at the end of someone's shift work when they might be stressed and tired, and they might smoke more compared to other times of the day. It could be a very simple kind of social element to smoking. It could be that they smoke only when they're with friends. So it's very important, once we raise the issue and someone is ready to discuss, to understand the behavior in more details. And that could happen through open-ended questions, kind of reflecting on what people say to us and summarizing kind of their views to understand what really matters to them and where the behavior occurs. And once we examine all that, then there is a series of different techniques that we can deploy. For example, we can use what is called an if-then plan. So if, in, for example, in this case, someone smokes with friends or socially, we can say, if you're out and about with friends, why don't you just leave your cigarettes at home? Or why don't you just go out with friends that might not be smoking? Therefore, there's not the opportunity for you to smoke. Therefore, you could reduce that likelihood. If someone smokes at the end of a very busy night at work and they might be stressed, you could then come up with other ways to relieve their stress and move them away from the need to smoke. You can also use things that have to do with pros and cons. It's quite a very easy technique where you kind of outline pros and cons. Pros, if you change what you're doing. Cons, if you carry on with the behavior. You can use things around looking into the future. Again, if you carry on doing what you do now, what is going to happen in a week, in a day, in a month, in a year, in 10 years? What is going to happen if you change your behavior now? So those comparisons and contrasts could be very useful for patients. They do know that information most of the time, but coming from a credible source, coming from a professional, could add extra validity and gravitas, and that can help them to maybe start their journey. It's very important as well, if you start the journey with someone, to consider relapses, because behavior change is not normally a linear process. Someone might start, they might relapse, they might need some extra support. Therefore, you do need to think about how do you support your patient if they actually smoke more than they intended, or if they don't adhere to the plan you put in place. And finally, I will really argue for dental professionals to think about SMART goals. And SMART goals are very important because they give you something very specific to focus on, something that's measurable, achievable, realistic, and a timely goal. And that can be very important to make the goals building up to a greater goal, not to go very unrealistic, very overarching goals early on, because that can lead to failure and that can have a negative consequence for the patient, but have SMART goals in place to help them make sense of the behavior, break into smaller chunks, and build up to a greater goal, which, for example, in this case, would be to stop smoking altogether.
Yeah, well, actually, this is very interesting. And I like what you said, that basically, even if we are not super good in the beginning, we need to try and start with something. So I really like this message that you gave. But I was also wondering, you know, when is the best time to perform this kind of behavior change conversation? Should we do it at the beginning when we first meet the patient, but we don't really know the patient that well, or we should do it during the treatment or at the end? So when is the best timing?
And this is a very, very important question. And I think given all the time constraints and all the different things that dentists need to do during any routine examination or treatment, it could be quite difficult for them to imagine, how do I fit this into my practice or in my kind of schedule, which is already very busy. And however, as we discussed, and because it is very important, behavior change, and it might feel that all the things that I've outlined just before might feel a bit cumbersome and might feel quite overwhelming for people. What I want to say, as you mentioned, Elena, is that obviously it doesn't have to be perfect all the time. And actually, all these things that I outline really depend on the patient you have in front of you. Some of these things could take seconds because someone might not be ready to engage. Therefore, that's the end of the kind of behavior change journey. If someone wants to engage, the behavior could be very specific, very, very easy to kind of make sense and analyze. So that way, it can take a couple of minutes. So it doesn't have to be an overwhelming session on behavior change. That's not the role. And all of these interventions are designed to be very brief and very tailored and targeted. One thing I would argue is for professionals to put behavior change at the beginning of consultations, if possible, to give behavior change the space and the time and the place that it needs, to highlight the importance of behavior change to the patient, because it was one of the first things you talk about rather than the last thing as an afterthought. That already highlights the importance of this conversation. But also for the dentist, it could then kind of provide a little structure for the rest of the appointment. So if you notice, if it's the first time you see someone, as you take their history or after an initial examination, you can pause and discuss about some behaviors that you might think might need changing. Otherwise, if it is a recall appointment, you probably know the history, you know who you have in front of you. So you can just open up with a discussion around smoking, alcohol, it could be their oral hygiene routines, and then carry on with whatever you have to do with them, and then re-emphasize the message at the end. So you can imagine a little bookended approach where you start with it, you do all the other clinical, surgical things you might have to do with the patient, and then you finish off again with that message. And that gets the patient thinking about their behaviors from start to finish. That's what would be, in an ideal world, my preference. But obviously, I do understand that this might not work for everyone. And I understand that obviously younger kind of professionals, like the next generation of dentists, that might not be as familiar to these techniques, might not feel as comfortable and competent and confident. They might want to approach it slightly different. That is why it's also important for people to bring their own agency into this and actually make these guidelines and tools and techniques work for them. But the overriding message, try and do it, whether at the beginning, at the end, in between, do something, because these are very important tools that can help your patient and can help you to help your patients.
And you already mentioned before the setting SMART goals. So is it advisable to set goals with the patient and maybe also to record them in writing somehow? Is that something you advise to do, or what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think SMART goals would be, in an ideal world, what you do every time with your patient. So at the end of any consultation, you have a series of goals. It could be one goal, it could be a few goals, depending on the behavior, the problem at hand. They don't need always to be written down, because obviously different forms might work best for different people. Some patients might want something written to take home because that has power for them to know what they do and refer back to it. Some others, maybe younger patients, might just want like to scribble something on their phone. So obviously that will depend on the patient and who you have in front of you. Again, as we actually move, as dentistry, as we move on to a more connected world, and you know, some patients might be using connected brushes or kind of newer technologies, there could be some goal setting coming through those channels as well. But I think setting some goals, whether it's a very simple goal to say to a patient, I want to see you in 6 months or a year if someone is not well attending, and that could be a very easy goal. Obviously, they come back, they've achieved that, it gives them the confidence, and they can then build to a different goal when it comes to maybe their oral health. If it is something more complicated like smoking, well, that's where we need to be smart with our goals and build them up over a period of time, where recall appointments can have a very important role to see how patients are doing, review the goals, make sure the goals still adhere to what the ultimate goal is, and make sure that they work for the patient, and then adjust as you go along, because smoking cessation could take time. And that's where having something maybe physical to review what you discussed, or something that the patients bring with them to map their journey, as they don't see you for 6 months and things could have happened in that time, that could be very useful. So again, it's a bit of a hybrid. Definitely set goals, SMART goals, and find out whether you want it to be in writing or on any different format that works for the patient.
Well, George, you know, while I was listening to you, I was just thinking that, you know, all these things that you said are so relevant and so interesting. And I realized that, at least in my experience, I don't know about Anina, but I cannot recall anyone mentioning this during my undergraduate studies, which is unbelievable, actually. So this brings me to my next question. So how important do you consider this topic and its integration into training and daily routine, especially for undergraduates?
That's an excellent point. And actually, I just finished teaching some undergraduates this morning. So I think it's just so fresh in my head, having people at this time of day and year just listening to you talking about behavior change in dentistry. And I do think, for many different reasons and for very good reasons, dentistry does remain a very practical, kind of surgically focused discipline around the world, because that is kind of the biggest part of your day-to-day practice. However, and as I said at the beginning, because behavior change is gaining momentum, and we do see how important it is. And what we do see a lot is dentists, as they leave dental school, they go out of the profession, and fairly quickly they realize, actually, I do need to know how to talk to patients about their behaviors. And they kind of tend to come back asking for some support and training and some resources. So I think dentists themselves, as they go out into the real world beyond the dental school, see how important behavior change is, and they come back at that point requesting kind of support. My view is that we do need to consider behavior change as an integral part of dental training to make sure that the next generation of dentists and dental professionals are introduced to behavior change from an early stage in their training. And also that behavior change is not standalone, but it's kind of integrated all around communication, issues when it comes to inequalities, dental public health. So we can't think of behavior change as a standalone piece where in a two-hour session, in your third year of training, you're going to learn everything, because it has to reflect the journey that dentists and dental students go through, and the more exposure they get to patients, the more relevant behavior becomes, and therefore the more practically they can use it in their day-to-day lives. And I think that message goes beyond the dental schools and kind of the dental curricula as dentists go out and practice. And we see that a lot in my university, and I hear it from other colleagues that then dentists come back asking for more support. So I think it is an ongoing journey, and I don't think we've reached the top of oral health behavior change. I think there are still a lot of things to examine and research and understand as we gain more insights into human behavior and how it relates to dentistry that will then feed out to the next generation of dentists and the practicing dentists out there. But it's definitely an exciting world. It's a world that's getting a lot of interest, a lot of research, a lot of funding, a lot of kind of policy changes and industry interest. So I think it's going to be here for the long run. And I do hope that we get a lot more time to talk about behavior change in dentistry in the years to come.
I also hope that it was really, really interesting. And thank you very much for this interesting talk. I think you gave us a nice overview of the topic of oral behavior change. And you showed us also how important oral behavior change is and addressed important key theories and also guidelines, as well as helpful tools for communicating with patients. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Thank you, George, also from my behalf, because I think you managed to turn on the spotlight on a topic that is really crucial and we need to know more about that. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Elena. Thank you, Nina, for the invite. I think it's always good when you hear people that you never spoke before coming to you asking about behavior change. I think that's a good sign that there is a bit of interest and discussion happening beyond kind of the confines of my work and other people's work. So thank you for the invite. It's been great talking to both of you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.